And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, co-host, and with me today will be David Holly and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Rotherham. Also, in the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, we will be discussing the recent price reduction for renewing season tickets for Fulham. We'll also have a discussion from a question I received from a Fulham supporter who wanted us to discuss if we were the Fulham manager, who would be our starting 11, and we can use anyone that has played for Fulham this season. We're going to discuss that as well. This should be a fun show. Before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host to the show first. David, how you doing, my friend?
Hi again, Russ. Nice to be back. It's a beautiful day here in the UK for once. We've had a lovely, warm, sunny day. Makes you feel so much better about things, and next season will be even cheaper to watch our favourite team than this year, so it's got to be good, isn't it? Let's just hope the football is going to be better. I guess it can't be a lot worse.
It can't be much worse than it has this season. It's been a dreadful season, but I am glad that there is a price reduction. We will be talking about that in a little bit, David. But it's like we have Mike on the line with us. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, Russ. Hi, David. Yeah, really good. And as David says, a lovely day in the UK.
Mike, if I can remember correctly, you let me know that you're in Cardiff right now?
Yeah, that's right. I've got an exhibition for work tomorrow, and so the company pays us to stay here overnight, so take advantage of that.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear, Mike. And listen, thank you again, because I know you're on the road for joining us tonight. I look forward to going through the show with you, my friend.
Yep, so do I. There's quite a bit to talk about, and obviously, tomorrow's game, which is still vitally important to us.
Absolutely, and listen, I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball to you guys, and David brought this to my attention yesterday to start the show in Cottage Talk Quick Shots. I'm going to read this article to you from Sky Sports. It's about Rotherham. And again, I'm just going to read this, and I just want to get your thoughts about this because it could have an impact on the rest of the season. Again, this was on Sky Sports. The title is Rotherham Charged by League. The Football League has charged Rotherham United with fielding an ineligible player in their SkyBet Championship match against Brighton on April 6th. The player in question is central defender Farron Rawson, who played a full 90 minutes as the Millers won the match at the New York Stadium 1-0. Rawson, 18, was on loan at Rotherham from Derby and was making the fourth appearance of his loan spell after joining them on a 28-day youth loan on March 7th, which would have expired on April 4th. Rotherham claimed a vital 1-0 win against Brighton to significantly boost their survival hopes. Rotherham boss Steve Evans claimed after the Brighton game that Rawson's youth loan had been extended until the end of the season, but Rawson was not involved in Rotherham's 2-0 defeat at Middlesbrough on Saturday, with Evans adding to the confusion afterwards by saying he had been recalled by the Rams. The matter will now be heard by a football disciplinary commission, which will take place at the earliest possible opportunity to ensure that it reaches its conclusion before the end of the current season. Rotherham are currently in 21st place in the championship table and 7 points clear of the relegation zone, but could face a points deduction if they're found guilty. AFC Wimbledon were deducted 3 points for the same offense last season in a 4-3 victory over Cheltenham. After being charged, the club issued a statement which read, Rotherham United FC have received the charge in relation to fielding an unregistered player. The case will be heard before the FDC, and such proceedings under league rules are confidential until the case is concluded. Therefore, we have been advised by our counsel, Jim Sturm QC, to make no further comment until the case is concluded. That obviously is coming from Rotherham United. All right, David, I'm going to start with you. You brought this to my attention. What are your thoughts about this news?
Well, it's, I guess, a welcome distraction. I mean, there's been similar cases where clubs have been fined, or there's been cases where they've had points deducted, and you'd think that, I suppose, the most logical punishment for this would be a points deduction, because the match where they fielded him, of course, they won, I think, 1-0 against Brighton. So Brighton will say, hold on, that's unfair. So I don't know if they'll take the points from them and give them to Brighton, or just take the points from them. But perhaps a three-point deduction is, you know, what's going to happen at the most. Can't see it being worse than that. Will that help Fulham? Maybe, maybe not. I think we need to be more concerned, obviously, about getting away from Wigan and Millwall.
Sure.
And, of course, tomorrow night we have our own chance to get 3 points away from Rotherham anyway. So I'm not sure how much of a bearing it really has on us. But obviously it's good, I suppose, hopefully ahead of this game, that they may have a distraction, you know, something to worry about as well. Though, as I say, I'm not sure how worried they'll be, because it's, you know, they, like ourselves, are, you know, have a reasonably a safe cushion at the moment. Even losing 3 points, you know, may make it more difficult. But again, tonight we'll know more of the task for tomorrow, in both our cases, of course, because other results may well, you know, go our way or not. So yeah, it's a good thing, I suppose, for Fulham. It doesn't do Fulham any harm, but I'm not sure how beneficial it is either.
It's an interesting thing. That's why I'm glad that you brought it to my attention. And I had seen it all over the internet right after you had sent it to me. And you said, you know what, we should talk about this. And you're right, we should talk about it. I don't know how much it's going to affect Fulham, but again, you bring up a very valid point. You know, will this distract them when they play the match tomorrow? It's a very interesting discussion. That's why I'm glad that you brought it to me, David. Mike, what are your thoughts about this whole situation with Rotherham?
Well, we had a similar situation last year with Sunderland, but they never had anything deducted. And the league rules, or their results from these kind of cases, seems to be very much case by case. You know, was there anything dodgy or suspect going on, or is it just a mistake? And anything involving Steve Evans, you've got a question, given his track record. And but in all honesty, you don't really want to be looking at other clubs to lose points to help your own cause. I doubt very much if they would give Brighton the points, it would be just a case of them being deducted. You could see it as a thing for us, really, because they go into tomorrow's game knowing that it's even more important to them that they win, just in case they do have some points deducted. So it's something that, you know, it's a paperwork error, probably. And knowing the league, I doubt if they will do anything major with it. But having read the rules on these kind of things, the FA rules, the Premier League rules, they really are as clear as mud. And someone somewhere should try and clean them up, because every time I look at them, I can never understand them. So I'm not surprised the club makes a mistake.
You know, it's funny, because this is an interesting situation, and like David mentioned, you know, could it have an effect, a negative effect? Yes, it could have a negative effect, but you just brought up a good point, Mike, if they're, you know, they could be worried and it could put a little bit more pressure, but it could also give them more focus, because they know that that this match is very important in case they do lose 3 points, so it could go either way of their mentality, but I find the whole situation interesting. So, David, again, I'm glad that you brought it to my attention. We'll see if it has a little, if any, effect on Fulham. But more importantly, Fulham need to be warned about Fulham. But I wanted just to bring this subject up. I just found it interesting. All right, guys, let's go back into Cutters Talk Quick Shots. And, Mike, I'll start with you, because we do have some very interesting speculation. And on Sunday, the Daily Star had a story that Fulham are keeping tabs on West Ham manager Sam Allardyce. What are your thoughts on this speculation? And just on top of it, Mike, you had a very interesting survey that you put out.
Yeah, on the back of this speculation with Allardyce, with Warburton, Bruce, Mick McCarthy, I decided to run a little survey over the weekend. And what I did was I put a short list of people up and to get people's votes. Had over 300 fans take part, which is a good number for a 24-hour vote. And then I whittled it down to just three for a short list, and that short list was John Tignor, Sam Allardyce, and Warburton. And Warburton won quite, he got 55%, which is a, you know, good majority. And it seems the fans at the moment would be quite happy with Warburton in charge. But the Allardyce one is interesting. We all know that he's probably going to leave West Ham. He has history with us. You know, we've come across him loads of times over the years, and his reputation is long ball direct, and he would dispute that, obviously. But
yes,
you know, with your own eyes, you can see how he plays and the tricks that he plays. But there's no doubting he gets the best from his teams, and he's very effective. And in the Championship, and if he was backed well by the chairman, which I expect the chairman this summer to back whoever's in charge, he could be a possibility. I'm on the fence. You know, it's like if you have to say to me Mick McCarthy or Sam Allardyce, I'll go Allardyce. But if you give me Allardyce and Nigel Adkins, I'll go Nigel Adkins. So it's a difficult one. I think the fans will have a problem with Allardyce, and he would have to win them over fairly quickly. But then you can also see that the mindset of the fans has changed, and it is a case of, let's just get a manager in who can do a job and get us promoted. And
right.
my view is the absolute must-have on the CV of any new manager is that they have won promotion from the Championship. That would be my red line. If you haven't got that, you don't get the job.
Well, he has that. Sam Allardyce
exactly
does have that with West Ham.
Yeah.
So he fits your criteria there, Mike.
He does. And so you have to look at the list of managers who are available or could be. And, you know, Warburton's had two good years. But, you know, I have my doubts on him. So if there is going to be a change, it has to be the right change, and it has to be, I believe, someone who has the experience of knowing what to do in this league.
Very interesting take. I like that take there, Mike. David, over to you. What are your thoughts about this speculation with Sam Allardyce? And listen, our Cutter Talk co-host, you know, couldn't be more excited. I'm talking about Emilio Danilo, because he would love to see Sam Allardyce as the next full manager. What do you make of this, and what do you think of Mike's take about the next manager needing experience of a promotion from the Championship to the Premier League?
Well, obviously, I have to say to you, Mike, yucky da, obviously, for today. Of course, that's why I voted for John Tigana when you asked me, so in your survey, because he has, obviously, experience of promotion from the Championship, and he has experience of been quite successful in the Premier League, so he fitted the bill. So I chose him because it's, I suppose, better the devil you know, and if only he could do something like he did before, you know, the fantastic football he created and the revolution he brought into Fulham. Because that's kind of what we need at the moment. I'm not sure if any other manager would bring such a revolution, because I think we need it. As regards Allardyce, well, if Emilio wants him, I think he's got to start doing an impression of him, just like Yanis does of Mick McCarthy. That's only fair, isn't it? I think that should be a prerequisite, actually. But, you know, in seriousness, I'm not sold on Allardyce. Although he's got a lot of experience in the game, I'm not sure if he's a fit for Fulham or not. I believe he was a contender before. I think he was a contender when maybe Roy became manager. I'm not sure. I'm sure there was one time in the past he was on the shortlist. Warburton seems to be the obvious choice because of you know the value for money that he brings. You know, from a small budget, he's achieved a lot of stuff. A bit like a modern day Mickey Adams for us, really. And you think if you could extrapolate that and give him a bit more money and a higher caliber of players, what the wonders he could do. But of course, it doesn't always work like that. So it's a very difficult choice between someone who's done really well on a low budget and managers who have done well with, you know, a lot of money, and then someone like Tigano, who's like a wild card. I don't think he's in the frame, although I did hear rumours that he is interested to come back, and I don't know how true that is, but he still has, you know, I don't know if he lives in the area or has a home in the area, but he's got to be worth a consideration, I think, if there is any interest there, because, you know, he left under a bit of a cloud. He had a falling out with Fayyad, but that regime has gone. We're in a whole new regime now, a clean slate. So if he's happy to come back and he is a contender, I think he should definitely be considered as well.
Okay, very interesting take there, David, and thank you for mentioning the names of the short list that Mike put together. And getting back to Warburton, because I was just about to ask you about it, because there was a story about him as well in the Daily Mail that Fulham could be interested in him, the current manager for Brentford. Again, it sounds like you're kind of split on Warburton. What are your thoughts about this?
Me again, sorry.
Yes.
Well, I'd say Warburton has done a fantastic job at Brentford. He's been very unlucky to be shown the door, really, after what he's done there, even if they don't make promotion. And, you know, someone who could really get a team working together, a team of no superstars, perhaps, you know, build a team up like that. Because that's what we lack. We lack this togetherness. Our team seems to be all over the place at the moment. There seems to be teams within a team almost. I'm not sure how well they really get on. You look at the way they play. There's, you know, fallings out and stuff on the pitch, arguments. You want a manager who can get a team together, playing together as a unit, because sometimes you don't need the superstars. So in that respect, you know, Warburton's been fantastic. You know, Brentford have achieved far, far more than anyone would have expected. And that's, you know, testament, obviously, to him. But, you know, he is the glue in, you know, whatever, that holds it all together. You know, and so, on that respect, I think it's great. But as a more long-term plan, I'm not sure, because, obviously, we don't know what he would do at a higher level. And, yes, with, you know, at a lower level, putting together players, you know, yes, he's done well, but will he be able to attract bigger names? Will he be able to move us on to the next level, which has been, you know, the question we had of Kit, and unfortunately, Kit seems to have failed on that one. And the same may happen with Warburton. You know, there's no guarantee that past success will bring future success, just as there's no guarantee that past failures will bring future failure. Not really. I mean, I mentioned Mickey Adams, and he was fantastic at Fulham. He really was, you know, he built together a team of nobodies, really, and got us out of the bottom tier of football, playing together. But did he really reproduce it elsewhere? I don't think he's really been that successful elsewhere as a manager, Mickey Adams, not in the way he was at Fulham. So sometimes it's not, you know, it can be you have this one club wonder scenario where you do really well somewhere, but not elsewhere. I suppose Allardyce has done okay at other clubs, which gives him that. And Chicano has done certainly well at Fulham before. I'm not sure if anyone else is really a serious contender or not. It's really hard to know what's going on, but, you know, the one thing we have to remember here, this is all speculation, because we have a manager in place, and there's no guarantee absolute that Kit is going to be shown the door either. I mean, we think it's going to be the case, but at the moment, you know, it's like we're talking about, you know, how Prince Charles will be as a king when the Queen is dead, but the Queen's still here. You know, the Queen may outlive Prince Charles at the end of the day, so who knows? It's just pure speculation, isn't it?
That's all it is, David. This is speculation, because we don't even know what Shah Khan's going to do. We don't. You know, again, he might stick with Kit, you know, but again, this is speculation, so it's out there. So I thought we would talk about it. And over to you, Mike. What are your thoughts about Warburton? You know, he doesn't fit your criteria, so I'm curious your thoughts about him as a manager overall.
Yeah, my concerns about Warburton is that it's his first year in the Championship, and everyone keeps going, you know, when people say, oh, we want someone with experience, I'll take Warburton. He's only managed 7 games more than Simons in the Championship. He took over a team which was doing well under Uwe Rosler, who went on to Wigan. So he's added to a team that was already doing well in League One. And yes, he's gotten promoted, and that momentum has carried them forward into this season. And they're doing really well, and I wish we were in that kind of position. And they do play a brand of football similar to Bournemouth, you know, with the two wide men and one up top, and they play it around quite fast. So, you know, the plus points are that in the three games we've played them, they have been the better side, and they play nice football, and he's kept them going this year. But I'm not one of these who thinks we need a massive rebuild, but we need, you know, probably five or six first-team players to come into a squad which has remnants of two seasons of just absolutely dreadful football and results. So it will be brand new for him to come into a team which needs that kind of build and uplift and to push us on. So he has no record of that. So that's where my reservation is with him. And, you know, we talk about it is speculation, but there is a momentum that, you know, the fans don't want Kit there. It was noticeable that Kit wasn't mentioned in the chairman's notes yesterday with the season ticket release. And, you know, you always hear things from people and, you know, the word on the street is that he's not going to last. So the speculation is right. You know, we will probably be looking for a new manager. But the strongest hints I get are that it's going to be Warburton because he is out of a job, which is the easiest thing to do, is to take someone from, you know, the unemployment line instead of going to a club and saying, can we have him? So I would say Warburton is, you know, probably 75% odds on that he's going to get the job.
Interesting. And listen, I understand where you're going on the logic behind it. You know, he will be out of a job. He's had a good season. But I'm glad that you also mentioned this, Mike. He only has, I think you said, what, seven more matches in the championship than Kidd? I mean, that's not a huge amount. You know, but he's had a very successful season. But a very good point by you. It's someone else's team. Someone else's team built that team. So, again, that's something to consider as well. Is he a one-hit wonder, you know, or is he someone that you can build a team around, meaning a manager that is there for the long term? So it's an interesting situation. Do you go with someone like you mentioned that fits the criteria that you know has a proven record of taking a team from the championship back to the Premier League, like an Allardyce, or do you roll the dice with someone like a Warburton, who, again, you know, has had a fantastic year, but can he do it again? So, you know, again, can he do it on a higher level? And he did this on a shoestring budget. So it's, again, it's all speculation. Like David said, this is complete speculation because, you know, Kit's the manager right now. But it's out there. We're all hearing things. I'm hearing things. You're hearing things. We're all hearing things. We're reading things. So, again, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the summer, but I do find it interesting that these are the two names that really have emerged. All right, David, right back to you. On Friday, the Scotsman had an article that Celtic could be interested in a summer move for Ross McCormack. Again, this is just speculation again. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, we've heard other stories, you know, like Derby were interested, and I don't know if there was anyone else. Forest was it? And I mean, you're going to get these kind of stories. I think I get the impression that, you know, Ross McCormack is probably finding it difficult because things haven't gone as smoothly as he would have hoped. And not so much for himself. I mean, he's had a reasonable season. He's scored goals. He's created goals. But, you know, in a holistic way, the team as a whole, I think, you know, he would have been expecting us to do a lot better. I think if we were to be relegated, unlikely as it is, we probably would lose him, most certainly. But I'm not sure. It's going to depend again, really, on what happens maybe with the manager. You know, a new manager might come in, and he may not even be part of his plans. You know, a new manager might not fancy him for whatever reason. He may think he's too maverick, too much of an individual. He might want a more kind of team player, someone who, you know, fits the bill and, you know, his bill. But it's an obvious speculation to make a Scottish team.
Right.
And, of course, it would, at this stage, it would be a move up for McCormack, I guess you'd say. although the standard of Scottish football isn't high overall, I mean, Celtic are, you know, one of the best teams, and there is a chance of European football there, so I can understand that, and closer links to the Scottish national team. However, true this is, I don't know, but again, you know, it's got to be about, one, where we finish this year, either in this league or not, and who's going to become the manager, if anyone, and whether they want him, and whether they can sell it to him anyway.
No, listen, it's a good point, very good point. Again, it's, these stories are out there. We've already heard other stories linked to Ross McCormack. I just found this one interesting. Like you said, it's Celtic. It's a little different, so that's the reason why I wanted to really bring this up. And, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on this. Again, David brings up some good points. Obviously, if we got relegated, you know, you would expect Ross McCormack to go. And as someone that went from Leeds to Fulham and probably expected a better season, I think that is my only concern is, you know, would he want to leave because we have had such a horrible season? But again, this is just pure speculation. But with Celtic, that's what got my ears perked up a little bit. You know, again, you know, Scotland, you know, like David said, possibility of playing Champions League football for Ross McCormack. The level of football, you know, is obviously different, but still, it's Celtic. So, what are your thoughts about this latest speculation with McCormack?
I think David covered most of it. I mean, it will have been a disappointing season. He was the big signing, and then that was it, wasn't it? Everyone else was cheap, so it hasn't worked out at all. And he doesn't look happy at times. And but really, it will depend on what happens managerial-wise. Also, in the end, if a good bid comes in, then, you know, you have to look at it. Because, personally, I don't think he's delivered as much as he should have done. And it's my old argument about that he's one of those players who we bought as a striker who can play midfield or wide, and he ends up doing that because the manager moves him out, and we, in a way, you lose a striker because of that. So I'm not saying sell him. I'm just saying that you know, you need to look at the big picture. And if we're going to go, we're going to lose Hugo. So does that mean at least one more striker will come in? You know, you have Woodrow, you have Dembele, you have Smith, McCormack. You know, are you going to go into the season with those four? I don't think so. I think you definitely need at least one more. I wouldn't be surprised to see Smith go. So I think it's all down to the bid, really. You know, if we got a 7 or 8, then I'm sure we'd snap someone's hand off. But it's a little bit too early. But the Scottish link makes sense. He's not really been... He was picked for the last squad. If he wants to play more for Scotland, then that's probably the best move for him. And going to Scotland, Celtic will pay him the same wages as us, and as you say, we'll get European football as well. So it could be, you know, a win for him, really, to get out of, you know, a club that's, you know, looking downwards at the moment, let's be honest.
Yeah, listen, it's an interesting situation. You know, again, I found this speculation, Mike, a little bit different for obvious reasons. Like you said, with it being Celtic, you know, if it's, you know, a different team, even in the championship, I feel confident that it really wouldn't go anywhere with Fulham because obviously they want him. But with Celtic, it's just a little bit different. We'll see if anything comes from it. It is early, and this is only speculation. And it's going to happen with your best players. You know, it's part of the deal. So we'll see if anything happens. Again, it's just speculation at this point, but something to really watch this summer. All right, guys, let's now move into the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. And before we go to our first subject, I am going to read the message from the chairman because that's going to set up our first topic. So I'm just going to read this. This is on the Fulham website yesterday, and this is from Shad Khan. Again, message from the chairman. You can read it right on the website or on the app. To begin, I want to express my sincere appreciation for your faithful backing of Fulham Football Club. We're about to conclude a season in the Skybet Championship that unfortunately posed more challenges than we had anticipated. Nevertheless, home or away, you were there for the Whites. there are no better supporters in football. Now it's time to look ahead. Over the summer months, we will strive to build a team capable of challenging for top honors while delivering you and your fellow supporters a brand of football that will make your trips to Craven College memorable and rewarding. Our commitment to raising our game is uncompromising at every level of the club, and we're eager to turn the page. With that, I hope you will join me in looking ahead to the 2015-2016 season as we announce next season's prices. I know you have a choice as to whether you stay on this journey with us, and that's why I wanted to reward all of our season ticket holders with a 15% reduction on last season's price. It's the least we can do to honor the loyalty you've shown us, and because we've always been a family club, we're making it easier than ever to bring your children to matches in 2015-2016 by reducing all of our junior ticket prices by 50%, everyone in the ground. I want to thank each and every season ticket holder for your magnificent support, certainly this past season, but throughout the years. With fans like you, and in a setting as grand as the wonderful Craven Cottage, this truly is a club like no other. Here's to seeing you next season at the Cottage. Come on, you Whites, Shad Khan. And yeah, like I mentioned, you can actually see that right on the Fulham website, and that's going to lead me into talking to you guys about two Cottage Talk Facebook questions. Here's the first one that talks directly about what I just shared with you. What are your thoughts on the price reduction for season tickets next season, as Fulham have reduced the renewal of season ticket by 15%, and season ticket for juniors has been cut in half? David, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts about the price reduction?
Well, it's obviously very welcome, isn't it? I mean, you know, you could argue and say, well, it's been so rubbish that they should let us come for free next year. It's been that bad. But obviously this is a business. It's not a charity. They have to find a balance. Yeah, the fear for the club is that the 10,500 season ticket holders they have now, they're not going to keep them. They need, obviously, to get as much of that in as they can. So, you know, they've taken a bit of a gamble here that they can keep as many of the existing season ticket holders at a lower rate than they had before. And perhaps a few people who, you know, weren't season ticket holders will be persuaded to try and get on board, because if this is the start of something big, then, you know, like last time, you know, I had my season ticket in a lower level, and I kept it all the way through, and I got to see Premiership football, whereas others didn't. I mean, I find it a bit ironic that there's a season ticket waiting list, apparently. I'm not really sure how many people are on that, seeing as we're not sold out. I also noticed it's quite interesting there's a move to take away people from the Putney end now. They're trying to move them to other parts of the ground. So I don't know if that's part of a future redevelopment or just to make that an all away end again at some point in the future. The other thing the club have done, which wasn't in the detail, but there's no mention this year of two free cup games, which we had last year. So any cup games will have to be paid for. So although they've given us a discount, they've taken perhaps a little bit back, although not very much. But overall, it's great. I mean, you know, for me personally, it's great because my season ticket goes down by about, I think it's £67, something like that.
Okay.
And in terms of my children, they're half price. They go from 119 to 59. And my oldest one will be 17 in August. He will still qualify for a child's ticket because on the 1st of August, he's still 16. They've moved the barriers up. So, yeah, for me personally, it's a good saving. So I'm saving 120, whatever I said, but £187 if I renew all three, which I guess I will do. I think I would have renewed anyway, whatever happened, you know me.
Right.
I do sometimes moan about it and stuff, but I've been doing it for years. I just hope that other people, other people see the benefit and are prepared to kind of, you know, stay with the ride, so to speak. And I'm sure if they're true, honest fans, they will do that. They'll, you know, meet Shad Khan halfway and say, okay, yeah, we'll take this and hope that next season is going to be better, which we all hope it's going to be the case. And you know, let's say, hope it can't be any worse. I mean, it's going to be hard to be worse, to be honest with you, because it has been an awful season. It really has. So, yeah, great for Fulham. I just hope that people will basically join in and play ball with them, and therefore they'll get their season ticket sales still.
Yeah, listen, that's the hope. And the one thing that I can just say, again, I can't speak for everyone, obviously, you know, it's an interesting situation with season tickets, but I will say that I did see a good amount on social media of people renewing their season tickets. How many, I don't know because I didn't take a poll, but I did see a decent amount of people renewing their season, or saying that they were renewing their season tickets. And I will be sharing some comments from the Fulham supporters in a little bit after I ask Mike his thoughts. But again, it is a reduction. I think that's a good thing. You know, based on the season we had, I think it's definitely the right thing to do. And to make it half price for juniors, I think, is a wonderful thing as well, to encourage younger fans to come. I think that's great. Mike, over to you, and I want to get your thoughts on this. And you're usually very good when it comes to finances and pricing. So I'm curious. I don't know if you have this answer, but do you know where Fulham fall with this price reduction in regards to prices for the championship in general?
Not in general, no. I mean, I think we'd still be probably in the higher end because of, we're not playing catch-up. We're sort of playing catch-down, if you like. But, I mean, you know, we're a London team, and so traditionally prices are always going to be a bit higher anyway. But it's a good move by the club. I mean, I got a bit of a heads-up on Friday at a meeting that the kind of figures they were talking about. I mean, I did say I was, you know, for where I sit, it was hoping to be about £100 reduction. It was 78, and like David, there's three of us who get tickets, and altogether our actual reduction's about 22%. So,
that's great.
You know, that's really good, and I totally agree with what you just said. You know, the reaction online from people has been very positive. There are going to be people who I'm not going to renew, because until he shows intent, but okay, we'll renew when he shows intent, and you will have missed the date, wouldn't you? So you've got to show a bit of faith in the club. I know that's very difficult given what's happened over the last 2 years, but the idea really is, and this is from the CEO and Sarah as well, you know, the whole marketing and sales team, is that they see it as a possibility to grab the younger fans, give them a season, you know, so where there's three who've got tickets, get another one for another child. And then if we have a great season next year and we get promoted and you're in the Premier League, then season tickets become a bit more harder to get. And, see, you know, we'd be back up to, full capacity again. So that's the idea behind it is, you know, we've got, as David said, we've got 10,500 season ticket holders. They would like to have the same number. 10.5 would be absolutely great from their point of view. I think without this incentive, if they'd just kept it the same, we would have been probably looking at 6,000 or 7,000 maybe. Sarah seems happy with the first day sales, and we'll have to see how it goes along. It was the right thing to do, and, you know, over two seasons now, because we had a reduction at the beginning of this one, you know, my tickets come down about nearly £150. So
that's good, Mike.
You can't really moan about that. Well, it would be
definitely. But again, it's obviously a level of football down. But yes, no, it's funny because again, like you mentioned, and let's be fair, there are going to be people that are not going to renew, and they have every right to. You know, if they're that upset, they don't want to renew, then don't. You know, then I understand why they wouldn't want to renew. I hope as many fans do renew as they can, and I think this is a decent reduction. I do. I think it's decent. You know, I'm just going to read some of the comments from the Fulham supporters and share that with you guys. And I'll start with Matt Smith, our friend in South Carolina, who, yes, does have season tickets. And this is what he shared. It's great for Heather and I. With us not being able to make it to a lot of matches, any save money helps. Alan Hammersley wrote, it's the least they could do considering the utter dross we've had to endure this season. Jamie Vade wrote, "It's made a big difference for me, especially as I moved from the cheaper Putney end to Hammersmith halfway through the season. The big thing for me, though, is subsidized away travel. Coach prices can cost as much as even more than away tickets. So this will hopefully add numbers to the traveling faithful." John Mason wrote, "Hopefully it shows a commitment from Khan and his club statement about investing in the future will materialize." Dean Rozier, "What more can Khan do? He has come under a lot of unfair criticism, and I can only see him doing good at our club. Plans for the Riverside development, deployment of rig, and now reduced ticket prices and subsidized travel subsidized away travel for fans. Yes, we've been poor this season, but Khan didn't have to do this, and for me, it shows a good intent from our owner. The summer, massive for our club, and I just hope he and others get it right. With financial fair play restrictions, of course." Simon James White wrote, "In general, clubs should be keeping season ticket prices as low as they can for fans. The sales of season tickets to fans isn't a massive income stream, even for big clubs, so it's a great way to encourage fans to attend games and reward loyal fans. German clubs keep season ticket prices very low for this reason. Totally agree with the post about Khan. Has come for a lot of unfair criticism this season. For me, instead of moaning, fans should buy putting their money where their mouth are and support the club by committing for buying a season ticket for next season." That was from Simon James White. Roger Lewis, a friend in Spain, "The least he could do, not exactly going to break the bank. Are non-season ticket prices going to be changed?" Roger, I have not seen anything about that. And, again, this is just for season ticket prices for right now. That's all I do know. But again, I have not seen anything about that. Ben Panda Lloyd wrote, "It's a nice touch. However, who knows if they were Mr. Khan's words. My guess is probably not, unfortunately. Would be nice to see a video statement from the man himself. At least that would show some sort of intent and sincerity. Nevertheless, onwards and upwards for next season." And Dean Pill wrote, "It's excellent. Value all around, and especially for the youngsters. The club still have to charge us. They can't give it away. It's a business." And that's the point. It is a business. And, you know, and we have to take that in consideration. It's not like they can give it away for free. You know, again, the business has to run, and they do have to charge something. You know, and so again, I want to get your thoughts. First, David, what are your thoughts about what the phone supporters had to say?
I don't know if there was a little bit of cynicism in there, but generally it's positive, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, we know that it's been difficult for Khan. You know, but personally, I suppose, and financially, it hasn't come out how he would have hoped it to be. And I guess, you know, he's trying to fix things a bit, and between him and the people that advise him, find the right balance as to maintain the fan base, attract new fans, and do what obviously they need to do. And I guess in the scheme of things these days, the gate money isn't as big a revenue as it would be in the old days, where it would be literally all the revenue. But I mean, obviously in the Premier League, for example, with the recent TV money rights, the way it's gone up, I believe they wouldn't need to take any gate money, some clubs. The difference in TV money covers their gate revenue anyway, or something like that. So the gate money is important, but it's only one part of the puzzle, isn't it, I think? And, you know, as I just mentioned to you on Skype there, I think, you know, maybe we should tie this in with what Mike was talking about earlier, because Mike was reporting on the club's finances in general. Because that kind of, you know, I think the reduction, obviously the reduction in revenue from the season tickets, from maybe less sales or price reductions like this, maybe might cost the club, I don't know, £1 million. But how much is that really in the scheme of things? How much does that affect the club? And yes, I think, you know, the fans have got value points. Most of what they said is absolutely right. And, you know, we've been through a really torrid time, and it's good that the club are trying to make gestures. It's just I hope that they are well thought out gestures and everything. You know, it's not just wild gestures to keep everyone on side because it's been terrible, because, you know, one bad decision after another is not going to help. So they've got to be with the right ideas. And I think, obviously, attracting a young fan base, and, you know, when you look at £59, okay, children, I don't think they're allowed to come until they're 14 or something unattended, unaccompanied. So you can't, unfortunately, you can't just sort of have all the local kids say they're going to go off to football without their parents. They will need to come with an adult unless they're 14, 15 or 16, I believe. But still, you know, a great present for a local kid really is, you know, £59 for a season, come and watch every match. If you can get more people on side, get them away from the other team in Fulham. Or can I call them by their name still, Russ? Are we still collecting money on that one?
We are still collecting money, so you can say
that. No, I won't put you under any mind pressure, but just imagine, it's a brilliant present for a 14, 15 or 16-year-old who likes their football, £59. Get people hooked on us. Just like me, I got hooked in 1972 on them for God knows why, but I got hooked on them and I've been here ever since. So maybe it's a great way forward. It is a great way forward to attract the young fans there.
Absolutely.
You know,
David. I totally agree with you on that. I'm sorry, keep going.
Yeah, they are the future of the club, just like, you know, I was, you know, 40 years ago, believe it or not. And, you know, they're absolutely stuck with me now, Fulham, just like they're stuck with Mike and all the rest of us, old grumps, you know.
No, good point there. And Mike, back to you. David brings up a good point. Listen, you did a great job on the finances of Fulham Football Club. And I'm curious your thoughts about this. You know, again, David did mention this. How much of a financial hit do you think this will be to the club?
Yeah, well, the accounts were actually published today, so I've sort of gone through them. But I'm not going to bore you with it all because I'm still sort of going through it all. But no, I did a fag packet sort of calculation yesterday, and I reckon that if they got the 10,500 again with this cutback, it's going to cost them about between £500,000 and £1 million in season ticket, in gate revenue. So, and David's quite right, you know, Premier League clubs could literally let everyone in for free for a season and still do okay if you're a mid-table Premier League side. Our gate receipts last year in the Premier League were about £12 million, but our actual total revenue was £90 million, so that gives you an idea. If we'd finished a few positions higher, then our revenue would have been £100 million. So, you know, you're talking about between 10-15% of our income is tickets. So, but that obviously, when you come into the Championship, it becomes a higher percentage because there's less TV money. So it's going to be a hit for the club, there's no doubt. And we would have taken quite, you know, a big hit this season on income from gates. But it's a plan for the future, isn't it? It's get the kids in, that lost generation, which we had when we were in the lower divisions. And, you know, hopefully we're not going to be down there that long. But, you know, if we can get back up to the Premier League, then, you know, which has to be the goal, which has to be the investment. And what I would say to people is, you know, you can't really say to Khan or the club, show me what you're going to do. If you want to get these cheaper tickets, you're going to have to do it beforehand, because we won't be able to buy anyone until June, and that's after the prices change. So it's a bit of a catch-22 for those people who are sitting on the fence waiting, because they're not going to see it. So I think back the club. This is the summer to do it. They've had 2 years of pain. Khan's learnt a lot. And I think his statement is not overboard. It's, you know, it's cautious in its own way. But there's things, like I said earlier, you know, he doesn't mention the manager. He mentions the brand of football. You know, these type of things make me think we're looking at a change, and that will be the biggest sign of intent, I think, if he does it straight after one of, you know, the last game and makes an appointment fairly early.
Well, what's interesting, Mike, and part of the reason why I wanted to read the statement, because, again, I've read the statements before, but I found what I got out of it is, you know, again, I'm just speculating like you are. You know, I'm speculating that he understands that this summer is huge and they are going to do what it takes to put us in the best possible position to start the season and be a team that can compete for the league. You know, that's what I got. You know, be near the top of the league to potentially get promoted. So that's what I took from the statement. And you know, again, part of that, you know, part of the reward back to the loyalty is a ticket reduction. But what I also got out was the feeling that I just got this feeling that he's going to go. You know, he's going to go big this summer. I don't know what that means. You know, what level big? Is that a new manager? Is that bringing in, you know, really, really good talent? But I think, you know, I think we're going to see a significant change of Fulham Football Club, of how they're made up at the beginning of next season. I really, truly believe that. And I think, you know, and again, I'm reading too much into his statement, but that's what that statement told me, is that I feel his statement's telling me that changes are going to happen, and we'll see what happens. And hopefully they're going to be some good changes, because Fulham definitely need that. All right, move on.
Let me just say, Russ.
Okay.
Let me just say that. I was at a meeting on Friday with McIntosh, and
okay.
He said, you know, you have to sell the reduction to Shahid Khan. You know, they had to persuade him that this was the right thing to do. And in return, Carney's going to do what's required. And he expects nothing less than top six. That's what McIntosh said.
Okay.
Nothing less than top six, and that's the target. I'm sure the target is top two positions, but, you know, we have to be realistic. And I think you're right. I think we are going to see movement very early in the summer to make that push.
Right, you know, and again, as I'm reading the statement, this is what I'm thinking, Mike, and, you know, again, you're kind of backing up my thoughts on it that you heard from Alistair McIntosh. Like you said, top six, and that type of intent, I mean, listen, that's what I want to hear, and that's what I'm expecting this summer. You know, get off running really fast, but build a team that you feel, like you just said, at least top six, and hopefully better than that. You know, like you said, hopefully better than that, but top six at least, minimum. And that's what they need to build this summer, a team that could at least be in the top six. So, again, let's move on. And guys, I want to share this with you, because I got a nice email on Sunday from a Fulham supporter, and he had this question, and I'm going to share it with everyone now, and I've also put it on the Cards Talk Facebook page. I found it interesting because he was listening to the show and he was curious your thoughts on this, so we're going to talk about it. And the College Talk Facebook question is this: if you were the manager of Fulham this season, who would you choose for your starting 11? We're talking about your starting 11. You're the manager for this season. You can choose anyone that's played for Fulham this season. What would be your starting 11? And I got some interesting thoughts from the Fulham supporters on the Facebook page. Mike, I'll start with you. Give me your starting 11. You are the manager for this season.
Oh, thanks for that, Russ. Okay, well, Bettinelli obviously in goal. My surrogate son, Jack Grimmer, right back. I'm going to have to go with husband at left back. You know, I think he has shown enough. Centre back for me would be Dan Byrne, and out of everyone else who has played at centre back, I'd probably go with Bodroff. On a good day, he's probably very solid. Midfield's quite difficult because we've played so many players, but I mean, the obvious people stand out. That's LVC, Parker, Heidman, for me, David as well. But
right.
If I was gonna pick the four to play, I'd still like to see the youngsters play. So my midfield would be Roberts on the wing, LVC, Heidman, and Williams. And then up front, I'd go the two top goal scorers, McCormick and Hugo.
McCormick and Hugo, I like that. Wow. Okay, so that would be your starting 11. Very interesting there, Mike. I knew you were going to pick Rimmer. How did I know you were going to pick Rimmer? I knew you were going there. All right. David, over to you.
Well, I just dialed back in and I missed that bit, so I was going to ask the most stupid question of the week by saying, who did you pick for right back, Mike? But you've just answered that one for me anyway there, so as if I didn't know. Well, you know, it's quite easy. I mean, there's only one choice for goal, obviously Bettinelli, I think. This, you know, Joranen only had a few games and Pyjamas is not going to get close. The fullback is hard in a way. I like Hoogland because he showed that he can be useful going forward. But I must admit, defensively, I'm concerned about him a little bit there. I don't really like Richards either. I don't think he's better than anyone else. Grimmer, I'm still not completely sold on him. I think, you know, he's coming along. But I'm not convinced yet if he's the right idea at right back either. So it's hard for me to pick, really. But I think that with a more balanced team, a better midfield, Hoogland's maybe defensive frailties wouldn't be as notable. So I am going to stick just with Hoogland on the basis that I think he can do better, and also he poses more of a goal-scoring threat at set pieces. And that's nothing against Grimmer, particularly. It's just it's hard to pick between any of them for me, really. In the middle, I think Bodroff deserves one of the places. He has been pretty solid and steady throughout the season. Otherwise, again, it's quite hard to pick. And I think on the basis that he turned things around from a poor start, I'm going to stick with Hutchinson. I also think that, you know, he's quite quick. He's quite strong. He doesn't make mistakes. He could be, a useful player. If not first team, certainly as a squad player, a useful one. And at left back, I did hear this one, Mike. I think, from what I've seen, I like Husband, actually. He offers, the best all-round left-back performance I've seen defensively and getting forward. So that would be my four at the back and Bettinelli in goal. Midfield, pretty obvious. Parker and Fofana are in there. And certainly, two out of the middle ones. Now, it's difficult, obviously, where we go for that otherwise. I'd like to include Tony Cliff for his, endeavours, but I'm not sure. I'd like to include Fofana. But, again, I'm not sure all round whether he should be there. But then you could say the same about Kakalicic. You could say the same about Ruiz, even, whether they should warrant a place week in, week out. Williams, likewise. But, again, there were some games where, he was in out of it. So it's really hard after those two to pick two more. So I think on the basis of, what I've seen, and it is a bit of a best of a bad bunch, to be honest with you. I am going to pick Tunnicliffe for, his... he puts effort in. I mean, he is a bit of a modern-day Steve Sidwell, really. I'm not sure if he's got enough quality.
Okay.
I'm going to have Tunnicliffe in there.
A modern-day Steve Sidwell. I love it. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to have him on the right, Tunnicliffe, like I keep saying. Give him a go there to offer support both the central midfield to right midfield and to protect Hoogland, because I think he'd be the best person to do that. And on the left, just because, he should be doing well at this level, I'm going to stick with Kaká. Because I think at times he's looked very dangerous running at people. It's just he needs to improve on his final ball. And up front, sorry, Mike, I'm going to have Matt Smith and Ross McCormack, because I think they have worked together well and offer the most variation up front. I know there isn't a plan B from that, really, at this stage, but out of the players I've seen, that would be probably my best team that's available to us at this stage.
Okay. Interesting starting 11. Okay. David, I'm going to give you mine. I'm sorry, David and Mike. I'm going to give you mine, and then I'm going to give you Jonathan Paulson's. Jonathan Paulson was the phone supporter that sent us this idea, so thank you, Jonathan, for for sending me this email so we could talk about this. Here's my starting 11. I'm going to go with Bettinelli. I'm going to go with Hoglund. Sorry, Mike. I'm going to go with Hutchinson. I'm going to go with Bodaroff. I'm going to go with Husband. I really like what I see from Husband. My midfield is going to be interesting. I'm going to go with LVC, Parker, Tunnicliffe, and David. Yes, Chris David. I'm going to go with Chris David. Chris David is the one player that I'm still upset is not with Fulham Football Club. I'm going to go with Chris David. And up front, I'm going to go with Ross McCormack, and I am going to stick with Matt Smith. So I guess you could say it would be a diamond with Chris David. So, okay. Jonathan Poulsen added, goalkeeper, he has is Bettinelli. Left back, Stafelidis. Center backs are Hutchinson and Bodaroff. Right back is Hoglund. Central defensive midfielder would be Parker. Central midfielder, David. Central midfielder, LVC. Left wing, Kaka. Right wing, Roberts. Forward, Ross McCormack. He has a 4-3-3, fast in the front, strong in the back. Keep the ball on the ground and fly down the wings. Obviously, it's tough to leave out Ruiz, but we need width and pace in this league. And again, that was Jonathan Poulsen. Why are you laughing, David?
It's not tough to leave out Ruiz.
Oh, David, you had to go there. You just he just couldn't help himself. So I'm curious, before I share the thoughts of the Fulham supporters, what do you think about my starting 11?
You asking me or are you asking Mike?
I'm asking you.
Well, yours was the same as mine, I think, Russ, but you had David instead of Kaka, didn't you, I think?
Yes.
So I'm not gonna argue with that. I would have liked to seen David have much more of a go there, and maybe he still will, you know. I mean, change of manager, could things all change again.
Yeah.
And he would have been a great person to try in that cam position to see what he could do, but he had such a limited chance, we'll never know. So, yeah, I mean, I can't say I would pick him over anyone else, but I certainly would have liked to have seen him have the chance. So, but otherwise, you know, you have picked basically the same team as me, so I can't argue with it too much.
Yes, I have, David. All right. I'm going to share some of the thoughts from the Fulham supporters on their starting 11 if they were the manager. Adam Braun Smith, 3-5-2. Betts, Byrne, Turner, Hutchinson, LVC, Tunnicliffe, Kaka, Roberts, Ruiz, McCormack, and Smith. Very interesting. Chris Lewis, Bettinelli, Richards, Husband, Byrne, Turner. In the midfield, Tunnicliffe, Christensen, Parker. Attacking midfielder, Ruiz, McCormack, and Smith up front. Let's see, Tomita Rahman, Bettinelli, Hoglund, Turner, Byrne, Husband, LVC, Guthrie. Debatable with him and Husband, considering they have only just recently come to us. Parker, Smith, McCormack. Taggart, although technically not played this season, he still has a lot to offer us, in my opinion. If not Taggart, put Hugo in there. Somehow needs to rekindle the form he showed earlier in the season. That's from Tomita Rahman. Let's see what else we have here. Dean Rozier, hard question, as many have failed to perform on a consistent basis. I would reluctantly go with this, but it really does illustrate why we are so poor. Our squad just is not very good, or probably more appropriate, not very experienced. 3-5-2 again, with two wingbacks, Betts, Bodaroff, Byrne, Turner, Tunnicliffe, Kavanaugh, Hyman, Parker, Ruiz, Woodrow, McCormack. My subs would be Fofana for Hyman, Smith for Woodrow, and Grimmer for Bodaroff. Okay. Let's see what else we got. And I'll just share one more just for time's sake. We'll go with Briefcase Ben. Trying to get some pace and width in the side. He's going with a 4-4-1-1. Long balls up to Smith would be plan B. But much like Mike Gregg said last time, Bettinelli, Grimmer, Turner, Hutchinson, Husband, LVC, Parker, Guthrie, Kaka, Ruiz, McCormack. His subs would be Kirilai, Hoglund, Fofana, Byrne, Staff, Smith, and Tunnicliffe. Okay. And again, I could keep going on. Thank you, everyone, for your thoughts on this. We had a good amount, but we just don't have time to go through all of them. Mike, before we move on, I want to get your thoughts on some of these formations and some of these starting 11s.
Well, I mean, we're all looking for the same thing. I like the 4-3-3 or the 4-5-1, but I think the telling thing, Russ, is I've jotted down a load of names. So let's just run through the midfield for a start.
Okay.
We've had Roberts, LVC, Heidman, Williams, Kaká, Parker, Fofana, David, Tunnicliffe. Then you could add Guthrie to it, and I'm sure I've missed other players out. But surely somewhere we could have got a good combination there to get
right.
to get us playing better. And so all these people who say we need to kick all the squad out, it's not. They've been managed poorly looking back, and we should have been able to put some team together. Maybe the defenders weren't good enough. Maybe the forwards weren't finishing well enough. But there surely is a decent four-man midfield out of all of those players.
Listen, I totally agree with you, and I said this. There's talent there. It just needs to be harnessed, and we need to identify who that talent, you know, what that core is going to be, especially in midfield, and then build around it, you know, all over the pitch. Like you said, defensively obviously was an issue and not finishing up top. But if you're looking at the midfield, Mike, you know, again, it's not that bad, and it's young. There's a good amount of young talent there, and I've said this, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. The one player that has really upset me has been the situation with Chris David, and I don't know if there's an issue with him personally, but again, he's a talented player. I'm curious your thoughts on Chris David and what happened to him this season.
Well, I've always been a fan of Chris David, and up until Guthrie came, he was the only player in the squad really who's put a really decent pass on him. And maybe it's an attitude thing. I'm pretty sure he was promised by McGath that he would have an important role to play this year. And for whatever reason, Simon sort of dumped him straight away. And unfortunately, it showed the two things missing from the midfields that have been played this year are the lack of passing from someone. And I'm not including Ruiz in that at all, really. On, you know, consistent basis, someone who can find a player. And then also strikingly missing from that list of 10 players or whatever it is a proper defensive midfielder. A holding midfielder who can, you know, win those tackles and lay the ball off. Parker isn't one. Tunnicliffe possibly could be, but he's not doing it at the moment. But they're the two striking things we've been missing from our midfield and what we've been asking for quite a while.
No, good stuff there, Mike. Hey, Mike, you're coming in a little bit choppy, obviously. You're on location in Cardiff. Why don't you try dialing back in and see if we get a better connection for the end of the show? All right, Mike dropped off there. Okay. All right, while we wait for Mike, let's start our preview, David, and I'll go through a little bit about Rotherham United. And they're currently 21st. They have 10 wins, 13 draws. They've lost 19. They've scored 42. They've given up 64 for a minus 22 goal differential, and they're on 43 points. Fulham are currently 20th, 12 wins, 9 draws, 21 losses, scored 54. Given up 75 for a minus 21 goal differential and are on 45 points. So we're two ahead in their last six. They've only won once, David, and they've lost five. They recently lost 2-0 to Middlesbrough, but before that they beat Brighton 1-0. And as everyone knows, their manager is Steve Evans. Their leading scorer is Matt Derbyshire with 8 goals, and Jordan Bowery has 4 goals. Another player to watch could be their central midfielder, Richard Smallwood. All right, David. While we wait for Mike, to share with me your thoughts on Rotherham United.
Well, again, you know, back to cliches, table doesn't lie. They've been down there more or less all season as well, like we have. The game up at the New York Stadium was actually quite an entertaining game, end-to-end stuff.
3-3.
Like a lot of teams, yeah. They had this kind of, you know, they had quite a direct style, really. We were a little bit naive that night, but they certainly had the potential to put the ball in the net, but then they had the potential to concede goals as well, because we, you know, three times or whatever we got back into the game there. So, you know, what else do you say, really, apart from it? Again, they're there for the taking, most certainly, as much as Wigan were, really. So this is a game that, you know, we should be winning. You know, we really should be winning these games. If you're not winning these games against the teams below you, you know, and who's below us? Blackpool, we didn't beat them. Millwall, we didn't beat them. Wigan, we didn't beat them. This is at home, obviously, yeah?
Right.
What does that say about us? I mean, I know we're talking about Rotherham here, but we haven't beaten any of the teams below us at home so far. You know, well, we've hardly beaten any of the teams above us at home either, I know, so it's kind of... It kind of goes both ways, but
right.
You know, it's quite a worrying message, really. So this is actually, you know, our chance, or it's our only chance this season to beat a team below us at home. Now, well, as I say, I don't know. There probably was a team below us at home at some point. I don't know. Maybe Brighton were below us when we played them at the Cottage as well, and we lost that one. That's right. If Mike's back, he can thumb through his stats, or Timmy in transit, if he's around, he can look at his stats, but. I don't know when we got higher in the table if we'd have beat anyone below us, but as it stands now, the teams that are below us, we haven't beaten any of them. So this is a once-in-a-lifetime chance to beat Rotherham tomorrow, and they're definitely beatable if we can get things right tomorrow.
Absolutely, David. They are completely beatable, but we need to take care of business. Mike is back with us. Mike, what are your thoughts about Rotherham United this season?
Possible, Russ. Is that better?
I think so, Mike. Just keep talking.
Well, I mean, they're pretty much where I expected them to be. They're struggling at the bottom, and I suspect their fans are saying, thank God there's three teams worse than them. And they gave us a good game up there. I heard David say that, and it was probably as close to that young mid played that night as I wanted. I remember, you know, even Eichfeld made an appearance. They are exactly where they should be. I mean, they're a division higher than, you know, one team, really. A good job keeping them, you know, above the relegation zone, but catching up with bottom three just haven't been good enough. So, one of those is, they would be in the bottom three, definitely, because they're not good enough. You watch them play the team. You should be beating them tomorrow.
No, we definitely should be, Mike. I mean, you know, again, there's no question about that, and David brought up a very good point. We should be beating Wigan. We should be beating Brighton. We should be beating these teams. You know, at the time, I believe Brighton was below us, and we should be beating Blackpool, and we haven't been at home. So this is a match that we should win, and David, you bring up a good point. What does it say about us that we cannot beat these teams at home? That's an excellent point. It's a sobering point, actually, if you really think about it, because we really should be beating these teams. All right, David, what can you tell us about the ref tomorrow?
Well, he's quite a young ref, actually. Andy Davis, I think it was. He's only been doing it for 2 years, so it's quite a big match to have a fairly inexperienced ref on, but obviously, he's got a bit of promise, and there's nothing particularly I can find about him that seems to suggest that he's a controversial ref. I mean, the one on Saturday had more about him, and he was okay. I don't think he was brilliant, but he was okay. So, yeah, it's surprising, really, that we haven't had really a big ref on any of these matches. You think the Wigan match might have, as it's such a, you know, important game, and this one likewise as well. And, I mean, on Saturday, the ref as well is no one of any note particularly at Blackpool, I noticed. So Andy Davis, a young ref, only started in 2012 at this level, so quite inexperienced, really. But I think he's reasonably rated, so let's hope for a good refereeing performance, I suppose.
No, I hear you, David. All right, right back to you. What do Fulham need to do to win this match?
Well, we've identified already that it's score first. So it's,
yes.
if it's score first and don't concede second, I think, because that's where it went wrong on, against Wigan. Of course, we've got the perfect start, you know, early goal we've been crying out for. But we just couldn't keep it up. So it's got to be, you know, keep it tight. Against Rotherham away, we did nothing but that, you know. We let three in. Okay, we got three back, which is good. to get three goals away from home, you know, is a good performance, I suppose, for any team. So if we can do that away, we've got to do it at home. So score first, and I think the way Fulham are, score more than once, most certainly, because, you know, one goal is never enough for us, really.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, Mike, listen, you've said this for several weeks. It's especially at home, it's about scoring first. So I'm assuming that's what you think Fulham need to do. But beyond that, what else do Fulham need to do to win this match tomorrow?
Not allow his team to have the ball like we did Wigan the other day. We need to take the game to them. If we go in all defensive again, we're just asking for trouble, because defensively we're not good enough. We're going to give a goal away or two at some stage like we did. So we
You don't think he's going
to
go on with that same game plan, do you?
Absolutely not. No. Because I suspect senior people at the club have told him to make a change for tomorrow night. And that's
okay.
All I'm going to say, really. We have to be on it. You know, the crowd, they weren't happy the other day. It was horrible leaving the ground and the reception Simons was getting as he walked down. But they can't go in with the same mindset. You know, no more six or seven defenders. It needs to have an attacking intent tomorrow and take the game to them. Because they will cause us problems, because we are at the bottom of the table because we can't defend. And it is as simple as that, and it might be a case of, can we outscore them tomorrow?
Well, we did play a 3-3 match with them, so that wouldn't shock me if there was multiple goals in this match. Mike, and what's interesting is I go back to something that David had said to me. You know, sometimes your best defense is your best offense, meaning that if you create opportunities, you're protecting yourself that way. And I agree with David when it comes to this approach. That's why I did not like the approach in the last match. I hope you're right that we don't see that again in this match, because I think they need to attack and take it to this team. And they need to get all 3 points. I'm going to say this again. Need to get all 3 points. The match happening in a little bit between Wigan and Millwall, that's happening tonight. If that does not come out a draw, we're talking a 6-point differential. And that's a little scary, honestly. So they need, regardless of what happens tonight in that match, they need to win and put this thing to bed. They need to win. David, over to you. Who's your key person in this match? Who needs to have an exceptional match for Fulham to win?
Well, it depends who he picks, but again, I think we're back to the same old favourites again, aren't we, really? We need Parker to do the business. We need him to drive the team forward. We need McCormack to do what he does. And after that, it's who else does he pick? I don't think we'll be seeing LBC. The silence last week wasn't a double bluff. It just was obviously the fact that he wasn't anywhere near fitness, and I don't think he is near enough to fitness yet. Will we see Guthrie back? I don't know. He could play an important role. But I think, you know, Rotherall play a fairly direct style of football, so we're also relying on the defence to do their bit for a change. But, again, it's getting forward. His attack is the best form of defence.
Yep.
I mean, last week, defence wasn't the best form of defence. We still let in two goals by playing a very defensive, negative line-up. So you might as well attack. And, you know, while the ball is up that end, they cannot score. Even if they've got Charlie Adam in the team, if the ball is that far at the pitch, they cannot score. So it's Parker to drive them forward, really, and, you know, whoever's up front, McCormack, really, to step up as well. We need him to really do the business, because he's shown flashes of it. He has shown flashes of it. But, you know, has he put in a real kind of superstar performance lately? I wouldn't say he has. He's been in and out. But again, it always comes back to Scott Parker. It's boring, I know, to say the same thing, but I can't see beyond that, because he is really the key to it.
Okay.
He has a good game. You know, we said it the other day, he has a good game, the team plays well. He has a mediocre game, it's mediocre. So Scotty,
no, you're right about
you
that
again,
David,
mate.
That's a No, listen, it's a valid point. It really does begin and end with Scott Parker, so I see where you're going on that. Mike, you've used Scott Parker as your key person to need to have a really good match. Would it be Scott Parker once again tomorrow night?
Well, I wouldn't actually pick him in my lineup, but if he is picked, and I suspect he will be, then yes, Dave is right. He will have to be key, and it will be McCormick again as well. But as I said just a few minutes ago, the key person tomorrow is Kit, and the mentality he sends the team out with. And if he sends them out defensively, then he fails in that job.
Okay. I hear you on that. All right, Mike, right back to you. Give me your starting 11 tomorrow.
Okay, so my team, if I was putting it out tomorrow,
would be... This is your team, yep.
Yeah. Bettinelli in goal, Grimmer and Husband as the fullbacks. I'd stick with Byrne and Turner, so same back five, really. But then I would freshen it up in midfield. If Guthrie is fit, I would have him and Tunnicliffe as the centre midfielders. I would have Kaká on the wing. And, of course, I'm going to pick Roberts, but he's nowhere near the team. So I would hope for Fofana even,
okay,
starts. We need some legs in midfield. And then maybe a bit of a surprise, but I would play Ruiz and McCormick up front. I'd play Ruiz just behind McCormick. The reason being you've got runners in Kaká and hopefully Roberts or Fofana, and they can run onto the ball. So that's what I would do. I would try to outpass that team. You know, they are a direct side, a bit lumbering. So that would be my tactics.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting. Sorry, 11. David?
No, I agree with Mike's theory there. Let's look at it in the bigger picture because we're not going to play Ruiz on Saturday at Blackpool, I would think, because the pitch there is awful. It's not his sort of place to go. He doesn't like these long journeys north. So if you're going to play Ruiz, play him, obviously, tomorrow night. And if you're going to play Ruiz, you've got to play him with runners around him, just like Mike says. You know, that's when he's at his best, because he doesn't do the running, not really. He needs the quick players. So I agree with that completely. If you probably saw today, I was hawking my article again today. I'm still trying to get more reads on that one before I write my next one. There's a few people who haven't read it, so anyone that wants to have a look, because I don't know, Phil Magnus, I think, on Twitter, wrote an article saying about our narrow diamond has been our issues. And, of course, I said to him, well, there we are then. That's just what I said. And so we were swapping articles. But the trouble is, the diamond has worked for us in other ways. It doesn't work, in a defensive way, of course. We've been exposed on the flanks. But it's the only time we've really been strong and winning battles in the middle. So there is this kind of still this question about the diamond. So if you play with the right people around you, yes, it's working. But then you end up losing the width. And this is the problem you have. And yes, the only way maybe to play Ruiz is in the diamond or as the second striker. But for me, I think we've got to stick with Matt Smith and McCormick up front still, because they, in the last game they've both scored a goal. What else can you ask for from your strikers? Well, two goals maybe, but three goals. But they have both done their job. So I think it would be unfair to leave any of them out. And the same at the back, really. I think I would be minded to stick to the same back four, back five that we started with against Wigan, it was now, wasn't it? So I think I would actually keep Grimmer in at right back, and I would certainly keep Husband in at left back, along with Byrne and Turner in the middle. Don't really want to keep unsettling these ones. But in midfield, I'm going to pick the same midfield as I picked again last time for myself that hasn't been acted on, and that'll be Kaká on the left. Right, it would be Tunnicliffe again to add support, and they can always come inside to help out. And in the middle, I would have Parker and Fofana to do the running. If Fofana is injured, because we haven't seen him, obviously Guthrie right to come in if he's not injured, of course, bring him back in. We're not going to see RVC, are we? Otherwise, if neither Guthrie or Fofana is available, then you are back down to you know, the option of putting Tony Cliff in there or even bringing Ruiz in. But yeah, it would be a gamble to have only Ruiz and Parker in centre midfield. So, you know, I would be tempted to pick Ruiz because I don't think he's going to play Saturday, but I just don't see the formation it will work for me. So I'm going to stick with Kaká, Parker, Fofana and Tony Cliff as my midfield four.
Okay. Oh, good stuff there, David. All right. Let's go to prediction time. Let's start with the Fulham supporters on the College Talk Facebook page. Justin White has 3-3. We can't hold the lead, and both teams can score. Got a feeling it's going to be the same score as the away game. Matt O'Phelan, 2-1, do a response. Tom and Araman, 3-1, we need a win. Lars Anderson, 2-2 after leading twice. Funny. Chris Jones, 2-1, both from McCormack. I like it, Chris. Both from McCormack. I like that. Simon Rugg, 2-3 to Rotherham. Sorry. No, don't be sorry, Simon. You're entitled to your opinion. Steve Gooch, God knows, could be any result. Alan Hammersley said 4-0 to us. I hope, come on, you whites. And Ian Fox, they owe us a win, surely. So that's all from the Fulham supporters. Michael, go to you first. Give me your prediction.
Okay, we're going to take the lead 1-0, then be 2-1 down at halftime, and then win 3-2 with a winner in the last 5 minutes.
Oh, you want to give me a heart attack, Mike? Okay. 3-2. Sounds good. David?
All right. Mike's been reading my mind again. I was going to say exactly the same, not necessarily the same way of scoring, but it's been a bit like Rotherham, but one better. We're not going to concede that other goal, so we can win it 3-2. But I think the guy was it Steve Gucci, said that any result, I mean, he's probably got the best one, because who knows what's actually going to happen, you know. I'm tempted just to pick, you know, a defeat for Fulham just on the hope that I'll be wrong, because sometimes we are. And the opposite happens. Like we did with Derby when we said we're going to get stuffed and we came out brilliantly.
Right.
We have to be winning this game. We have to win this game. And 3-2 is still going to be a nail-biting wreck probably for us. We should be saying, you know, we can win this game 4-0, put everything to bed. But did you just see it happening? I don't know. I heard rumours that Kit got a dressing down from Mike Rigg over his selection and tactics. But whether that's true or not, who knows? And if it is, will Kit change? I mean, if basically Mike Rigg and Kirby tell him who he has to pick, then is Kit actually in charge anymore? So, you know, it begs the question, doesn't it? You know, who is going to be picking this team tomorrow? Kit or someone else telling Kit who to pick? But if we see anything like we saw against Wigan, then expect rantings in the post-match show anyway.
Okay.
Or the
prediction?
Preview show on Friday.
Okay, prediction?
Yeah, 3-2 as well, I said, yeah.
3-2, okay. We only have 2 minutes and I have to wrap up this show. Guys, I'm going 3-1. 3-1 to Fulham. And David, hat trick from Ross McCormack, of course. 3-1 to Fulham. I just think that they need to win this game, and 3-2 is too tight for me, so I'm going to go 3-1. Guys, before we go, I want to mention this again. Our friend Rebecca Williams, who was a guest on the show, if you want to support Rebecca's marathon, you can text Fulham to 70004 to donate £5 to Rebecca's marathon. Please continue to donate to that. And just want to mention, I will be gone for a week, guys. I'll be gone, and in my place, doing a couple of shows, hosting a couple of shows, will be our friend Emilio Danello will be taking over. But David, you'll be helping out one of the shows, so it should be good. I'm looking forward to listening to the show without me. I'll be in California, so it should be interesting. Well, before we go, just a reminder, you can download College Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can now listen to College Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. And, of course, David, you have to listen to College Talk on the iPhone because the iPhone 6 is fantastic. I had to throw that in there.
You've got 2 HTC ones against you now, so you're outnumbered.
Okay, I hear you. Well, that's it for this episode. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers, Mike. Cheers, Russ. See ya.
Okay.